Bien, on va commencer. Le Collège de France en ma personne, je suis Philippe Descola, je suis anthropologue, professeur dans cette maison d'anthropologie, et j'ai le grand plaisir d'accueillir aujourd'hui Linda Manzanilla, qui est une grande archéologue mexicaine, qui s'intéresse depuis toujours aux premières sociétés urbaines, aux états archaïques en Mésoamérique, mais aussi bien au-delà, puisqu'en réalité, elle a commencé sa carrière, au Mexique, bien sûr, où elle a fait sa maestría. Elle est professeure à l'UNAM, l'Université nationale autonome de Mexico, et au Colegio Nacional de Mexico, qui est une institution qui est un peu analogue au Collège de France et avec laquelle le Collège de France a un programme d'échange. Et donc, c'est dans le cadre de ce programme d'échange que Linda Manzanilla est venue faire cette conférence. C'est une institution qui regroupe des chercheurs de toutes les disciplines, comme ici, qui font des conférences aussi régulièrement, des cours. Et donc, il nous a semblé que c'était une bonne idée de resserrer les liens entre la France et le Mexique en ayant un convenio. Le fait d'avoir parlé espagnol avec Linda me fait un peu mélanger les langues, d'avoir un accord d'échange entre le Collège de France et le Colegio Nacional. Donc je reviens à la carrière de Linda Manzanilla, qui a commencé en fait par l'étude de la formation des premiers États et des cités-États autour de la Méditerranée. Sa maestria à l'Université autonome portait sur la Mésopotamie, sur la formation des cités-États en Mésopotamie au 5e millénaire, si mes souvenirs sont bons, et ensuite sur Sumer. Et puis elle est venue en France, où elle a fait une thèse d'égyptologie à Paris 4 sur la formation de l'État pharaonique, en Égypte donc. Et ensuite, elle a fait des terrains, toujours sur les mêmes thèmes, sur ses premières cités, ses premières formes d'organisation politique, ailleurs, en particulier dans les Andes, à Tiwanaku. Mm-hmm. Mais évidemment, la cité-État auquel le nom de Linda Manzanilla est le plus attaché, c'est Teotihuacan, cet extraordinaire site qui avait déjà émerveillé les Aztèques et qu'elle fouille depuis longtemps. Je rappelle simplement que c'était à l'époque un centre urbain sans équivalent. Linda Manzanilla étudie à la fois le Teotihuacan comme centre rituel, comme centre politique, mais aussi comme cité pluriethnique et comporte des quartiers spécialisés. C'est donc tout cet ensemble qu'elle a analysé au fil des années, et c'est une partie de son travail qu'elle va nous restituer aujourd'hui dans cette conférence. Merci Linda d'être venue, et surtout accident de terrain classique chez les archéologues, une chute, et donc je suis d'autant plus reconnaissant à Linda Manzanilla d'avoir accepté de venir alors qu'elle s'est fracturée une épaule.
Merci, docteur Descola. Je m'excuse que la conférence ne soit pas en français lorsqu'il y a 35 ans que je ne parle pas votre belle langue et je risque de faire des épouvantables erreurs, donc je m'excuse. Et je suis très contente d'être de nouveau au Collège de France, où j'ai passé des journées entières à la bibliothèque lorsque j'étais à la Sorbonne. Et ça revient des très, très belles époques d'étudiantes ici. La conférence sera en anglais et je m'excuse. this huge city that I will speak of today is one of the largest pre-industrial cities in the world. You can see here in the basin of Mexico the 20 square kilometer city surrounded by rural sites. And I will stress the exceptional characteristics of Teotihuacan in Mesoamerica. It is an exception. It's not the common example of settlement, urban settlement in Mesoamerica. It's an exception. So here in William Sanders' map, you see this huge city, 125,000 people of different origins co-residing in the same settlement, a very well-planned settlement, an orthogonal city. And that is also an exception because, in general, Mesoamerica does not have orthogonal cities. Teotihuacan was the first, and Tenochtitlan is the last of pre-Hispanic times. And here you see the volcanoes and the city, which covers all the valley bottom of the Valley of Teotihuacan. And what was the first phenomenon that triggered a large-scale demographic movement towards the Valley of Teotihuacan? It was the volcanic eruption of the huge, the largest volcano in central Mexico, which is the Popocatépetl. It erupted around the first century AD, and a large amount of people moved to a valley already occupied by formative villages. So you have this eruption, and many sites which have been excavated by Gabriela Uruñuela and Patricia Plunkett in the eastern slope of the Popocatépetl were abandoned. So all of these people had to move because of the eruption, but they were living in these formative sites in a way that you see afterwards in Teotihuacan. You see, for example, three structures around a courtyard with altars, which you see in a huge scale in Teotihuacan. They were building their structures with tablero talud architecture, which is a special type of architecture, which you see in a monumental scale in Teotihuacan. So all of these people were living in a more complex way than the villages, one of which I excavated with Marcella Frangipane in the Teotihuacan Valley, which is Cuanalan, which it was a formative village with huts, people living in a very, very simple way that does not compare with what you see here. These are people living in a more complex way. And they had to move because of the volcanic eruption, and they came to the valley. Why the Valley of Teotihuacan? Because the Valley of Teotihuacan had water springs, a lot of water springs. It had construction materials, volcanic tuff, volcanic basalt, scoria, andesite, many types of volcanic material from which the city was built. So they arrived to a very a large valley, a very they didn't occupy the summit of the mountains, but the valley itself, as you saw in the map. And this is René Milon's map. Walked around the valley for 10 years to have the map with photogrammetry ready. And you can see a very orthogonal city at right angles with the San Juan River that follows the grid, which no river does in the natural environment. You see a more populated northern half than the southern alluvial plain, and that is normal because the alluvial plain was devoted to agriculture in the valley. And what you see is that people coming from different areas of Mesoamerica, of which three foreign neighborhoods have been individuated in the periphery of the site. You see the Zapotec people from Oaxaca in the west, because coming from Oaxaca, the first part of the city that you touch is precisely this one. People from Michoacán coming from the west also, they are in one small compound. And people from Veracruz coming from the east would touch Teotihuacan exactly where the foreign neighborhood stands, for people from Veracruz. With Veronica Ortega's work, dissertation, you can see that there are a lot of people from Oaxaca occupying the western avenue of Teotihuacan, which is this avenue here. So the Oaxaca barrio really is comprising three different groups of Oaxaca people established in the city of Teotihuacan. So it is a multi-ethnic settlement, and one of the issues that I will stress in my talk is how do we find out about multi-ethnicity in the archaeological record. And I will put an example of my excavations in a neighborhood, a multi-ethnic neighborhood, Teopancasco, which is situated more or less here. And of course, the city itself is imposing because it has these huge plazas, congregation areas that you see, for example, the Moon Plaza here, you can see it here, the Sun Plaza here in the large Ciudadela. For me, if you ask me, how do you conceive Teotihuacan as a city? I do not conceive it as New York, that everybody is free to walk around the city. It is not. Because in the neighborhoods, the common people are based in their neighborhoods. There are around 22 neighborhood centers, and people are based in their neighborhoods, common people, but the elite of Teotihuacan, being a corporate society, the elite, as Milan stated, is comprising thousands of people. The elite in Teotihuacan is not a very small group. Thousands of people constitute the elite. These elite are free to walk in these huge plazas, not the common people. Why do I say that? First of all, because Rubén Cabrera, when he excavated the neighborhood of La Ventilla, found control booths on top of streets, not to along the street, on top of the street. So they are controlling the flow of people. They are not allowing people, common people, to walk about the city. And another issue is that entering the city, you have to walk an elevated platform and then go down to the city. There is a control in the entrance of the city in many parts. So this Jaime Delgado found one of these control centers to the east of the city, more or less here in the Eastern Avenue. There is controlled access to the city. So what I think is that these huge environments for congregation, public ceremonies are for the elite, not for common people to attend. Common people do their rituals in the neighborhood plazas, in the neighborhood centers, as you will see further on. I have, of course, much data to state this. That is why I'm saying it. And also, the city had this quadripartite organization, very common in the Mesoamerican cosmos. The cosmos in Mesoamerica was imagined as an earthly space divided into the four quarters of the universe. And it had an underworld, constituted of tunnels, caves. The underworld, I have excavated four of these tunnels around the Pyramid of the Sun, and this idea of an underworld is present in the city. But you can see that this underworld were really quarries for the construction materials being extracted from those tunnels to construct the city itself. So these are the tunnels for extracting the construction materials. Afterward, they became the underworld. And Sergio Gómez is now finishing the excavation of the largest of these tunnels in the Ciudadela, which is imposing. Around the Pyramid of the Sun, the ones I excavated never have this huge under the subterranean environment, as Sergio has found. And Alfredo López Austin once proposed that perhaps the four-petal flower would be the emblem glyph of Teotihuacan. It may well be for the Teotihuacanos, because the four-petal flower is a very important symbol in the center of the city. Even whole vessels I have found in Teopancasco have this four quarters of the universe depicted. So you see here the main plazas, and of course rituals such as planting rituals of anonymous individuals, because you don't see the names of these people. And that is very common in corporate societies, where the group is more important than the individual. As once Cogill stated, these corporate societies are based in groups, in social groups. So even the writing system, which is very simple in Teotihuacan, is related to emblems, to toponyms, not to names of rulers, as you see in the Maya region. And once Gary Feynman, Richard Blanton, Kovalevsky, and Peregrine stated that corporate societies do not have the stressing on particular rulers or individuals, but in forces of nature, in water, in rain, in things that are anonymous also, but you see processions of individuals doing ritual related to fertility, to rain, to abundance. So the effect of people coming to the city and seeing these mural paintings are to see groups of people doing the same activity as planting ritual. For example, here you see the planting ritual towards an idol. You don't see what you see in the Mayan area. And that is one of the things that makes Teotihuacan an exception. It is a corporate society. At the base, because of the corporate groups, at the summit, I propose a co-rulership of the city. That is why nobody has ever found a royal tomb in Teotihuacan. Nobody will ever find a royal tomb in Teotihuacan, because when you have councils, you don't have this ceremonies as you see for Pakal in Palenque or for other rulers in the Mayan area or in Monte Albán, which you see a huge palace in the northern platform. And another thing that this society has is it's an inclusive society. If you come from Veracruz, you can play ball game as you do in Veracruz. If you come from Michoacán, you can play ball game as you do it in Michoacán. It doesn't impose a way of being when you come to the city. So it is inclusive in the first intention. And of course, it is a multi-ethnic society. And because five or six languages may have been spoken in the city, it is very important to be able to recognize who is who, because of the attires and the headdresses, the facial painting, what you wear. It is very important that you recognize. You have an indexical elements that you recognize in people. And you don't have to speak. You know that people comes from southern Puebla, this other one may be from Oaxaca, etc. And what I think is that not only ethnicity has indexical ways of recognizing who is who, but also office. Different offices, different activities may have different headdresses, different attires, and of course hierarchy, social hierarchy also. So I think that the ethnic neighborhoods are situated in the periphery, but the multi-ethnic neighborhoods, of which they are mainly Teotihuacan but have multi-ethnic labor force, are situated in the inner circle of Teotihuacan. And the foreign neighborhoods have, of course, objects coming from these different regions. They have urns, funerary practices that are very common for each ethnic group, because these are canonical ways that these people replicate identity through funerary practices, ways of dressing, etc. For example, the merchant barrio that was excavated by Evelyn Rattray in the eastern part of the city is the only one in all Teotihuacan that has round structures, adobe round structures. So Veracruzans may have been very important as to be allowed to build their houses as they did it in their place of origin. This is very exceptional because all the city is built with stone, with stucco, in rectangular or square compounds, but only the Veracruzans lived in round huts or structures. And they brought even pots from the Mayan area, the papagayo polychrome pots that are not common in the city. These were brought by Veracruzans. The Oaxaca barrio, which now has three different concentrations of Oaxaca people, even have stele with Oaxaca glyphs. They have a lot of urns, very, very magnificent urns. They have tombs, as you see them in Monte Albán, Oaxaca. So funeral practices were the first element from which people recognized multi-ethnicity in the city, because the Oaxacans, they built tombs, as you see in Oaxaca, with antechamber and chamber, with extended corpses, not with flexed ones, as you see by the buried by the Teotihuacanos. So these tombs are very imposing because nobody is buried in tombs in Teotihuacan except the Oaxaqueños, no? The Michoacanos, the ones from the west, have, following Sergio Gomez's excavation, they have shaft tombs, as you see in Michoacan, but also pottery and figurines, as the ones Noguera found in Michoacan. So multi-ethnicity is seen in the multi-ethnic neighborhoods through the representations of the multi-ethnic people in figurines. These first come from the merchant's barrio excavated by Evelyn Rattray, but there are others that I have found in Teopancasco which depict people from afar. They are not people from, as the Teotihuacanos depict themselves. Many of these people may have been foreign people. They have ways of depicting themselves that are not the main way that the Teotihuacanos use. What do we see in the main pyramids of the site, in the Sun Pyramid, in the Moon Pyramid, and the Feather Serpent Pyramid? What we see there are not royal tombs, are consecration rituals for the buildings of these different construction epochs. So I think that the term consecration ritual is very well said by Leonardo López Luján for these findings, particularly in the Moon Pyramid. But also in the Sun Pyramid, the early offerings that have been excavated recently, you see funerary masks, you see these figurines, which you see in many other consecration rituals. In the Pyramid of the Moon, Saburo Sugiyama and Ruben Cabrera found animals of which are the emblems of the main groups of the city. The main districts of the city have these emblems. Well, the animals depicting the emblems were buried together, sometimes with sacrificed people. They were sacrificed. So eagles, felines, canids, and even serpents are the main emblems of the four groups that constitute, for me, the core rulership of the city. You will see further on why do I say this. And these are the offerings, the consecration offerings that you see inside the pyramid of the moon. Many Tlaloc vessels or rain god vessels, all, many of these sitting or standing figurines made, some of greenstone, some of obsidian, as you see here. And the sacrificed people, they have their hands tied in their back, they are sacrificed. There is no royal tomb inside the pyramids. And this is one thing that states apart the pyramids of Teotihuacan from other pyramids in Mesoamerica. In 1985, I started the excavation of a compound, a multi-family compound, to see how people lived inside the city. And I excavated Ostoyahualco 15B. There were other compounds, domestic compounds, already excavated by Laurette Séjourné in the 60s, and from 1957 onwards. And I excavated a small one in the periphery of the city. And what we did is an anatomy of how people lived in the city of Teotihuacan. We found out that in this small compound, which National Geographic reproduced in the 1995 issue of the journal, three families were co-residing in a compound which has 550 square meters. Three families. How do we establish the apartment of each family? We located the kitchens of the families first. And we did it with chemical analysis of the floors, with paleobotany, paleozoology, and also the different archaeological elements that were found in each of these kitchens. So we could even know where the portable stove stood, where was the grinding area of the kitchen. And of course, each kitchen had a storeroom. We have the storage vessels attached to the storeroom. And we could more or less conceive what was the typical Teotihuacan kitchen. So we could establish that each family had a kitchen. And it is very important to see that they did not share a kitchen for all the three families working together in that compound. Each one was autonomous, had its own apartment, and also each one had a ritual courtyard. So this is also very important, because we thought originally that people co-residing in a compound were kinsmen, were sharing, were related by kinship. They are not necessarily related by kinship, and I may state that they are not related. They are related because they are co-residing in a place because they have a common activity. And this is very important, because in general, this multi-ethnic society does not behave as the Maya society. I excavated in Cobá a solar, a domestic area of a Maya city, and you see there that the different families co-residing in a solar or in a domestic environment, they have one sanctuary for the ancestors. They are related, and they go to one sanctuary. And in Teotihuacan, each family had a ritual courtyard. You see here the one of the ritual courtyards, the other of the ritual courtyards, and the third one, with different deities, different patron deities. So this is the one I excavated in Cobá. And you see two families with their kitchens and their dormitories, but there is one sanctuary for all the extended family. This is one thing you don't see in Teotihuacan. So I may state that they are not kinsmen. They are related because they have a common activity. And the common activity of the people of Ostoyahualco was preparing stucco and putting stucco on walls and floors. That they were masons. They were they finished the walls and floors. So there is a difference of a ritual family and an independent apartments for three different households in Teotihuacan. We also saw that there was a hierarchy inside a compound. So not all the families have the same status. There is one of the families that is more important than the others. And you see this also in Mesopotamian societies of the Ubaid period, where the main family lives in the central part of the compound and the two low status family to the sides. Here you don't see the sides, but what you see is that the main family has the state god of Teotihuacan as a patron god, the god of thunder, the god of rain. And the other families have low-scale deities, even a small rabbit as a patron god. So you see different statuses going on inside a compound. There is a hierarchy inside. And what is very important of Teotihuacan is that there are four scales of craft production in the city. There are simple crafts being made in the domestic compound, such as the extraction of blades, of obsidian blades. The cores are found in the compounds, domestic compounds. There, most of the crafts, most of the pottery, most of the obsidian is crafted in the periphery of the site. And you see many places in the periphery where all this is done. Even the stucco production is in the periphery. My compound, the one I excavated, is in the periphery of Teotihuacan. And you see lime production outside the lime stains, outside the compound. But there are other types of craftsmen in the city. Very specialized crafts are made in neighborhood centers. The Teopancasco excavation, of which I'll speak of further on, gives us an example of what is happening in these neighborhood centers where these attires and headdresses are crafted. And these are very specialized crafts made with multi-ethnic labor force. They are not Teotihuacanos crafting these attires. They are people coming from different parts of Mesoamerica as craftsmen, as specialized craftsmen. And also the rulers have their own craftsmen inside the palaces. For example, I have been excavating Shala, which is a huge palace to the north of the Pyramid of the Sun. And there you have people crafting mica from Oaxaca. You also have gifts from the Maya elite, which were given for the foundation offerings of Shala very early in Teotihuacan in 150 AD, but many different crafts made of mica from Oaxaca are being done in the palaces. Of course, there are also garment makers, potters, painters, lapidary people. So I will talk about what is the characteristic of the neighborhood centers of Teotihuacan. Who are working in the neighborhood centers? How do we know who is who of these people buried in the neighborhood center? How do we know that they come from different parts? So I will speak about our interdisciplinary strategy to find out who is who in a neighborhood center. But before I do that, because Teopancasco was my example for doing this, I may say that there are more or less 22 neighborhood centers as Teopancasco in the city of Teotihuacan. And these neighborhood centers are in the four districts of the city. The city may have been divided in four districts. And another thing I may say before starting the Teopancasco case is that the intermediate elite, the nobles of middle range that are managing the neighborhood centers, are entrepreneurs. They are very competitive. They compete one neighborhood center with the other to bring from different parts of Mesoamerica sumptuary goods. These are the most dynamic elements of Teotihuacan society. The corporate groups, as the Teopancas, the Ostoyahualco apartment compound I talked about before, are the people, the common people, the working class. But now I am going to talk about the middle range nobles that are competing between themselves, and this competing issue tears apart the corporate structure of Teotihuacan. Is the way the society, the most dynamic way that this society has, but it also is tearing apart the corporate element of the society, which will bring a revolt at the end of the Teotihuacan history. Before I go to that phase, I may talk about how are these neighborhood centers constituted. So there are around 22 neighborhood centers, and each one is a coordination center for a neighborhood. It has a ritual component, an administrative sector, a very specialized craft area, a military, the guard of the neighborhood are based there, a residential component for the nobles that manage the neighborhood, an alignment of kitchens and storerooms, so you don't see the kitchens in the apartments of people, because not many people are living in neighborhood centers, but the kitchens are aligned to give the daily food to workers. And also there is a medical facility and an outdoor space around it. So Teopancasco was an example of this neighborhood center, and you could see that it has a huge plaza. It's not a common ritual courtyard that you see in apartment compounds. It's a huge plaza and a huge temple. So this is one of the elements of neighborhood centers. Through 13 field seasons, I excavated Teopancasco with my students. And as I was telling Dr. Descola, this example is very important to so students can learn activity area detection, burials, burial excavation, each portico room and patio are excavated with a grid. So it's a way of learning how to excavate. Some contexts in Teotihuacan are for students and some others are not, because they are very complex, because they are looted, because the stratigraphy is not very easy to comprehend. So Teopancasco was a way to for students to learn how to excavate extensively. So we excavated most of the neighborhood center. Leopoldo Batres had, in the 19th century, excavated the first rooms, because a beautiful mural painting emerged, and he was summoned to excavate the first. And we, here you see, for example, the alignment of kitchens and storerooms to give the workers food, daily rations of food. And this was the mural painting of Teopancasco, which was found in the 19th century, and that Leopoldo Batres had to expose. And you see here a very important point that George Kubler also noted, is that these priests are doing a planting ceremony, but their attire has many elements of marine origin. So these are the priests of the ocean, as Kubler stated. And you will see why. Because Teopancasco is the most important compound in Teotihuacan, relating all the stuff found in the site with Veracruz, with a particular place in Veracruz, the Nautla region. We have a huge courtyard or plaza with an altar and a temple. We have the actions that were taking place in that plaza. These priests are throwing organic liquids with salvia seeds, chia seeds, and we found in the archaeological record the seeds, and the phosphate analysis of the floors gave us the organic flows that they were throwing to the to the floor of the plaza. The chemical analysis of the floors can give us an idea that they were throwing, this is phosphate analysis, these organic liquids, and they were walking and eroding the stucco because of the sandals that were they used. They walked towards the altar, up the temple, down the temple to the four quarters and the corners of the plaza, and they were eroding in their walking, eroding the stucco floors. That is why in the carbonate anomaly you see these clear areas where they were walking to and fro. And in the archaeological record we found the chia seeds that they were throwing, these small points that they were depicting. There are termination rituals of one Teotihuacan phase and other termination rituals 200 years after in the other Teotihuacan phase. But what we see in the 350 AD termination rituals are many elements of decapitation of young adults that are set in vessels. Each head is set in vessels with cinnabar, and this is a ritual that is not Teotihuacan. It comes from the Mistequilla area in Veracruz. It is a huge ritual that was found at the site, which comes from Veracruz. There is also the dismemberment of people and animals, and also the replication of this in figurines. And the termination ritual with the decapitated people are set in this northeastern part of the compound. In Cerro de las Mesas, Veracruz, Drucker also found heads of people in vessels under a floor, as we did in Teopancasco. Another termination ritual related to the end of the Tlamimilolpa phase is the shattering of vessels such as this one, which was exposed in the exhibition of Teotihuacan here in Paris some years ago, and now is in Los Angeles. This was shattered in a termination ritual similar to what the Aztecs called the Fuego Nuevo. 200 years afterwards, at the end of the Xolalpan phase, there was also the desacralization of cult objects, such as the fire god, the shattering of Tlaloc vases also, with a face towards the floor. These are abandonment rituals at the end when the great fire of Teotihuacan took place. The administrative component of each neighborhood center has to do with stamp seals. As you see in Mesopotamia, the stamping of goods, the control of goods through the stamping seals. What seals? The four-petal flower as a symbol of the city, the storm god symbol, the fire god, and a small monkey, which is the representation of the Veracruzan group co-residing in Teopancasco. What I have proposed is that the workers, which are crafting the emblems of the of this elite heading the barrio, were given food rations, particularly tortillas, but food made of maize. And these are the symbols relating each of the workers through a rationing system that was prepared in the kitchens, in the alignment of kitchens and storerooms. So there are different sizes of these roundels or tokens for the tortilla and maize rations. So we may imagine that there are the people controlling the group of workers, which are given more food than the workers themselves. And what I say that these are tortilla or maize rations is because the tortillas are depicted in the theater type sensor I found in Ostoyahualco, in the apartment compound I excavated in the 80s. So tortillas, tamales, many different food, maize itself, tamales, squash flowers, squashes, etc., are depicted as food, and they may have been the rations given to the workers. The workers, the most important ones, were situated in the area where the crafting of the attires and headdresses was found. And there we found all the kit, the needles, the pins, the perforators, etc. And they were also crafting things made of shell to put in these attires, as we saw in the mural painting. And we have a lot of animals coming from the Gulf Coast to Teopancasco. That is why Kubler's observation that that was the priest related to the ocean is true. 14 varieties of marine fish were found in Teopancasco. It's the only place in all Teotihuacan which many elements of this origin, this marine origin. And you see all these marine elements being put in the cotton cloths, and also they were crafting the headdresses, because the facial parts of many animals were cut to be put in the in these imposing headdresses. We also found the animals from which the feathers were taken up from, and many, many things in the place where the attires were crafted. They were also crafting baskets and nets. As you see here in the altar, there were nets going on. And we have individuated the people who were fishing all these 14 varieties of fish and taking them to Teopancasco because of the activity markers in their skeletons. You will see that further on. They were also lacquering pottery to make it similar to the lacquer pottery of Veracruz. And they were using many grinding stones to do a paste of stucco with color and with lacquer and red pigment to be the base of mural paintings and of pottery painting. But the most interesting part of this research was to find out who is who of all these 116 people buried in Teopancasco. So we did all the different things that one could do in the 21st century for these skeletons found at the city, at the neighborhood center. We found out, for example, that there were many newborn babies who were buried at that site. In general, in Teotihuacan, we find a lot of newborn babies. But here in Teopancasco, these newborn babies may be the babies that were died in birth, and the mothers of the neighborhood came to the neighborhood center because maybe there were people who were helping them to give birth, but because of the nutritional aspect of the mother, these babies died in birth. So they were buried in the neighborhood center. There are also children of different ages, and then a lot of young adults, and then some elderly people. One thing that is different from the apartment compounds where people lived in Teotihuacan. Where people lived in Teotihuacan, you see men and and women buried more or less in the same proportion. So adult men and women. But in neighborhood centers, those were scenarios of men. Many of the skeletons, of the adult skeletons, are male. 85% of the adults buried in Teopancasco are men. So who are the women, the rest 15% of the adults there? They were multi-crafting craftswomen. They were very specialized craftswomen, women who can compete with the men there. And we did the activity marker analysis in their skeletons, so we know that they were very skilled craftswomen. Not any women can be buried in a neighborhood center. They were very specialized in their work. And through stable isotopes and strontium isotopes, we could find out from where they came from. So first of all, with trace elements, we found out that some of these people, of the adults, had a marine component in their diet. So they were people eating many of those fish that we were talking about coming from the Gulf Coast. Others had a terrestrial, non-desertic diet. Others had a terrestrial, desertic diet. But through oxygen isotopes, we know who came from the coast. Which of these people, of these burials, came from the coast? Which others came from lower altitudes than Teotihuacan? Who came from the basin of Mexico? Most of those, of the people there. And who came from higher altitudes than Teotihuacan? And we may think of Cofre de Perote, Pico de Orizaba, which are higher mountains going towards Veracruz. We also know with nitrogen isotopes that most of the workers were, they were given rations of maize, atoles, tortillas, tamales, but of animals fed with maize, dogs and turkeys which were fed with maize. So we know that there were food rations, but mostly related to maize for the workers. When you go and see the apartment compounds where Teotihuacanos live, they have a very good diet, a very balanced diet, with many protein animals that they were eating, hares, rabbits, etc. These people were fed, the workers that came, that were not Teotihuacan, were fed with tortillas, tamales, atole, and turkey and dogs fed with maize. It was a very special ration for them. And you see the people who came, who were local to the basin of Mexico, the people who came from the corridor toward Veracruz, and the people who came from the lowlands. With strontium isotope, we could see who were the people who came from afar, who were the people coming from the corridor towards Veracruz, and who were the local people coming from Teotihuacan. The activity markers, who were the burials that were crafting the attires, were sewing and sewing and sewing for long periods of time, that their fingers had the activity markers of the sewing for many hours a day. Who were the ones that were softening fibers with their teeth, doing this with fibers? And many of them were softening fibers. Who were the ones that carried through the caravan system all these goods to and fro from Veracruz to Teopancasco, to and fro? They had the compression of the cervical vertebra. They had this activity marker in the occipital bone. Who were the ones that were walking with the caravans? And they had the activity markers in their feet. This is very clear for each of the different groups working in Teopancasco. And who were the three of the burials were the divers that brought the wide variety of conch shells from the oceans to the site. They had auditory exostosis in their ear because of diving in cold waters. And of course, paleopathologists, you see that many of these craftsmen came from the corridor towards Veracruz and some from Veracruz. And most of these people migrating to Teotihuacan had nutritional stress during infancy. When they were infants, they were not eating well. But they came to the city, as most migrants come, to eat, to have a work that may give them a, that may provide them food. So they were given rations, food rations, and of course they could go on living without being dead because of the nutritional stress. Most of them had dental cavities, some of them had very important dental cavities, and we have 116 formal burials, but also many others that were bones subject to heat, to boiling, so you could craft the different instruments for sewing and for crafting the attires. We have cranial deformation from other parts of Mesoamerica. We have incrustation. We even did DNA, and we know that the four genetical groups from Mesoamerica are represented in one neighborhood center of Teotihuacan, the four genetic groups of Mesoamerica. So you can see what an heterogeneous society is Teotihuacan. One neighborhood can give us an idea that everyone is there participating of the group. So even in the different construction phases, you have the four haplogroups of Mesoamerica. We could even sex the babies, newborn babies that died in birth. Half of them are male, half of them are female, which you don't see in the adult population. And we did with the forensic analysis of our laboratory at UNAM, the facial approximation of some of these burials, so you could see more or less what they looked like with a forensic laboratory. And you see that they have different profiles. They came from different areas of the corridor towards Veracruz. There was even a child that was going to be a military who was buried in the military area of Teopancasco, who was being trained as a military and who had figurines of military personnel buried with him, which is this child. The alignment of kitchens and storerooms also were done with chemical analysis, the house of the administrator, and here are the figurines that were together with that child who was going to be a military. We have different crafts being crafted in the city and the widest variety of conch shells that came from the three oceans towards Teopancasco was found in this site. And more or less, this is the corridor towards Nautla. So the people from Teopancasco passed through Calpulalpan. They stopped by at San Jose Chalasco. I excavated a small part of Chalasco in 2008. And they went to Nautla, from which cotton cloths, the different varieties of fish came from. Cotton fibers also came from Veracruz. Some of the pottery, Laker pottery, came from the Mistequilla region of Veracruz. Some other was crafted in Teotihuacan. And you could see with neutron activation that some of these pots came from the Mistequilla area of Veracruz. Some other crafts came from Guerrero, that is southern Mexico. You have slate, you have greenstone, you have the granular ware, and also cosmetic and perfumes. With the University of Valencia, we did the archaeometry of miniature vessels from which different facial paints and corporate paints came from. Galena, which gives a gray color, cinnabar, which gives an orange one, hematite, jarosite, aromatic resins also. And one thing that was very important, that these small miniature vessels had all these cosmetic elements that Maria Luisa Vasquez individuated, is one thing that a French medical doctor analyzed the toxicity of these elements, because they were mixed. For example, cinnabar and galena, which are very toxic, they were mixed with other elements to reduce toxicity, so they can be used as corporate and facial paints. And also the elements for mural painting in Teopancasco. You see here different mural paintings from the site, which also have a large archaeometry analysis to individuate each of the paints. Even we have the paints as roundels in the site. So it was very important, the movement to and fro. What I propose is that each of these neighborhood centers was organized as what Lévi-Strauss called société à maison. Why do I propose this? Because these people working in Teopancasco did not only work as workers. They were part of a symbolic relation to the ocean. They were part of these caravans going and coming from the ocean to Teopancasco. They had emblems. The Société à Maison of Teopancasco is related to the ocean, so the attire of the elite is related to the ocean. They had ceremonies such as the throwing of nets. Even the altar in the site has a net. We could individuate the people who were bringing the fish to the site, and in the ritual courtyard they were eating fish. They were not only just bringing the fish, they were doing communal banquets eating fish. So there is a symbolic element also uniting all these people. And other barrios, other neighborhoods in Teotihuacan have other elements, other symbols, other attires, other emblems. So they may be groups that are related to this concept of société à maison. What I suppose is that Teopancasco's emblem is the fish. It's the only site in all Teotihuacan that has such a large amount of marine fish. It is this element related to the ocean that is stressed in the main attire. Other neighborhoods had the other attires. There is not one that has all these marine elements from other neighborhoods. And of course, they were bringing cotton cloths to the site. And this is how the elite of Teotihuacan was dressed. The common people, they were dressing with agave fibers, but the elite was being dressed with cotton cloths from Veracruz. So is there a middle class in Teotihuacan? Are there the master craftsmen organizing a middle class? Maybe, because the revolt towards the end of Teotihuacan is towards the ruling elite. From these craftsmen, master craftsmen, and from the intermediate elite. Why do I say this? That the revolt that set on fire the main Street of the Dead compounds and buildings is towards the ruling elite, because I think that the autonomous character of these neighborhood centers, they were organizing caravans, they were enriching themselves, they were bringing sumptuary goods. Each neighborhood has a different array of sumptuary goods. They were competing between neighborhoods. I think that the state, the ruling elite, was late in trying to control this autonomous character. And when they tried to control, there was a rebellion from this very autonomous and very entrepreneurial intermediate elite. As some words to end this talk, I will really just say something about the ruling elite. I am still excavating the Palace of Xala. It's not very clear who is ruling Teotihuacan, but I will tell you my version of the story. So you see the Maya groups who are ruled by one ruler. This ruler has very particular characteristics, mostly related to deities. What I say is that Teotihuacan was ruled by a council of elite individuals coming from the four districts of the city. And this is my proposition of who are the people ruling Teotihuacan. They have emblems. The felines are from the northeast. The eagles, or birds of prey, are from the northwest. The canids, or coyotes, are from the southwest. And the serpents are from the southeast. These four types of animals are represented in consecration rituals, such as the ones in the Pyramid of the Moon. We saw that the animals were buried together with sacrificed people. Only once are these four co-rulers represented in the Las Colinas vessel found by Linné. And many of us have asked us, where is the ruling elite residing? Where are the palaces of the rulers? And it is not easy to state this, because we don't have the case of the Maya society where the city Acropolis and the palace of the rulers set in the Acropolis. We have some examples of huge palaces in the city, but not one of them has evidences that the rulers were living there. For example, the palaces to the north and south of the Temple of the Feathered Serpent are imposing, but the excavations of these palaces give us an idea that priests were there, not rulers, priests. There was a proposition that the Street of the Dead complex had rulers, but the Street of the Dead cuts the palace into two, so it's very awkward to see a palace with the main street cutting it into two sides. I don't see how this can happen. And so what I propose is that there is a palace, not in the along the Street of the Dead, but a little more private, which is Shala. I have been excavating this palace since the year 2000, and it is a huge palace, 55,000 square meters, with a wall, a surveillance wall. What we say in Spanish, it has a paso de ronda. The people doing the controlling of the entrance to the palace are walking on top of this huge wall. And this palace has a main plaza with four structures towards the four quarters of the universe. So it has a northern one, an eastern, a southern, and a western, equivalent in size. But they also have a temple in the center. So these are not temples. These are the offices of the rulers, and they have a temple to do ritual together. So you see here the main plaza with the four equivalent structures and the temple in the center. And this palace was looted when the city fell, when the city was burned. In 550, people from the Bajío region came and looted the site. They were looking for the construction offerings with jade, and sometimes they found them, sometimes they left the construction rituals, so we found them. And towards 550, when the city was burned, all these sculptures were shattered into pieces. So each of the structures has a different deity. The one to the east is related to the thunder god, the main god of Teotihuacan. It has theater-type censers. It has the emblem of the thunder god, which are the felines. It has the emblem of the thunder god. The one to the north is related to the fire god and pregnancy of women. The one to the south is related to the mountain god, and even the mountain altars we found in the excavation. This is a looted mural painting of the mountain god. And the one to the west has the foundation offerings with jade coming from the Matawa region of the Mayan area. So what we found is that perhaps two of the rulers, of the co-rulers, had their offices there, and their female counterparts in front of each one. So the god of rain had the goddess of flowing water to the front. The god of mountains had the fertility goddess in front of him. So what I propose is perhaps two of the four core rulers had this palace as their center of operation. And they have a temple where they can do ritual together. They have workers, craftsmen working with cinnabar at the site, craftsmen working with mica, lapidary people, craftsmen crafting attires at the site as attached worksmen. They have worked insignia, they have worked shell, and shell being worked there. There are different deities represented, the female deity to the north, the god of rain, the god of fire, and all the sculptures were shattered at the end. There are different types of sacrifices, of human sacrifices. There are offerings, foundation offerings, that very early were given as gifts from the Maya rulers to the very incipient Teotihuacan elite. And I recently found a domestic area of this palace. We found porticos, rooms, and patios related to the mountain god structure here. So there is a plaza where the workers were set as attached workers. There is the main plaza where the two of the core rulers and their female counterparts are. There is the mica treasure. They were treasuring mica from Oaxaca. And of course, this is a multifunctional palace for Teotihuacan. In 550, we have the different dates of the fire with archaeomagnetism. All the Street of the Dead buildings were set on fire, and Shala was also. Very, very high fires, and all the sculptures were shattered into pieces. This is a revolt. It's not an invasion of people. It is a revolt. And the only people that may have revolted is the people that were tried to control very late in Teotihuacan history, the neighborhood centers, which were the most dynamic part of the Teotihuacan society. So corporate at the base and the summit, and competitive in the middle of the society, it tore apart the corporate structure of the city. There are many looting events in Shala and most of the Street of the Dead complexes. We still don't have the rulers' palaces, nor the rulers' tombs, but what I say is that Shala is a multifunctional palace for perhaps two of the rulers. And of course, what I said is that Teotihuacan is a huge metropolis that has people coming from different parts of Mesoamerica working in the periphery of the site or working in the neighborhood center organization with the caravans. And of course, the allies of Teotihuacan are the Oaxaqueños, the Monte Albán people. You see Teotihuacanos elite giving gifts to the rulers of Monte Albán, but you don't see that in the Mayan area. And of course, my projects are also are always interdisciplinary, and I always thank all my collaborators. Thank you.